Now. Real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.
Welcome to Nighttime Talk. Good evening. It's AJ Walsh in for Niall Boylan. Tonight, we've got a lot to get through and we want to hear from you. We're opening up the phone lines on 087-188-0008, so text or WhatsApp in with your views. First up, hostile architecture. Are measures like anti-homeless spikes and divided benches necessary for public order, or are they cruel and inhumane? Should we be designing cities to keep people out, or should we be focusing on solutions to homelessness instead? Then we're asking if children should be banned from pubs. In Ireland, the pub is more than just a place to drink. It's a social space and a community hub. But is it really the right environment for under-18s? Should we be rethinking our approach, or is this just another example of unnecessary regulation? And finally, has Lent been forgotten? For generations, Lent was a time of fasting and sacrifice. But as Ireland becomes more secular, is the tradition fading away? Do people still give things up for Lent, or is it something only our parents and grandparents took seriously? And later on, we'll be stirring the pot with a battle of the generations, Gen Z versus millennials. Who's got it tougher? Who's making the biggest impact? And which generation really has the right to complain? We want to hear your thoughts. Text or WhatsApp 087-188-0008. First up, I want to focus on an issue that's shaping our urban landscapes, hostile architecture. This design strategy incorporates elements like spikes, segmented benches and sprinklers to deter behaviours deemed undesirable, often affecting the most vulnerable in our society, those experiencing homelessness. In Dublin, instances of such measures have sparked debate in recent years. In 2016, a business in Temple Bar installed motion-activated sprinklers outside its premises to deter rough sleepers, leading to public outcry and discussions about the ethics of such deterrence. Similarly, the installation of metal spikes outside buildings to prevent individuals from sleeping has been met with criticism, with calls for legislation to ban these inhumane devices. This phenomenon, of course, isn't unique to Dublin. Globally, cities have adopted defensive designs like this to discourage loitering and sleeping in public spaces. These measures raise questions about inclusivity and the role of public spaces in addressing social issues. So as our own housing crisis persists, last year an encampment of tents was established along Dublin's Grand Canal, just yards from where the first major dismantling of a large encampment happened, just around the corner on Mount Street. Several kilometres of security fencing was then erected to deter these encampments and was then removed. This just highlights the ongoing challenges in accommodating those without housing. So is hostile architecture a necessary tool to maintain order and safety, or does it represent a cruel tactic that marginalises those already in distress? Is it actually ruining the aesthetic of our towns and cities? Let us know your thoughts on WhatsApp 087-188-0008, or get involved on social media on Facebook at Ireland's Classic Hits and on X at Classic Hits Radio. I'm going to go to Louis first. Hi Louis, how are you?
Oh good, how are you?
Yeah, not too bad. So what do you think about this hostile architecture? Had you heard of it before?
I'm very aware of it. I'm a teacher as well, and I do a lot of SPHE, and it's something that kind of came up in class and it sparked a debate. It's kind of similar to what you're doing at the moment in our class. And I obviously, being a teacher, I have to be impartial, but I strictly disagree, disprove of hostile architecture. I think it's utter nonsense, I think, personally.
It's great that you were bringing it up in school. I didn't realise that was on the... Is it on the curriculum?
It's not necessarily on the curriculum. It was kind of something we were chatting in SPHE about homelessness, and like these were fifth and sixth years, and we were kind of, it was kind of just sparked a conversation about, someone brought up hostile architecture, and we did a kind of like 15-20 minute chat about it, and it was a bit of a debate that we were talking about trying to find pros and cons for each, and obviously myself trying to stay neutral, but I genuinely think it's a reflection on our society, on Dublin, especially Dublin as a whole, that businesses feel like they have to go to that measure, homelessness has gotten so bad that they think that they have to do this sort of stuff, when they could actually use the money that they have put into hostile architecture into solving the crisis as a whole. You know, I don't think it does anything for anyone.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I'm interested, what was the students' reaction when it was brought up in class?
It was about 99% of them, and from the get-go, disagreed with this. And by the end of the conversation, everyone agreed that that isn't a positive thing for Dublin. Everyone was kind of like the majority, 100% of them were behind saying, you know what, it's actually not beneficial to do for anyone involved. It looks ugly. It creates division between the upper classes and the lower classes and the people who are homeless, and it creates superiority for the people who have money to be able to build these structures and amend these structures and all that sort of stuff. So that's kind of the points that they came up with, that it creates more division, and it also it doesn't look nice. So
yeah, no, it absolutely definitely doesn't look nice. And the fact now that they're actually designing things with this in mind is actually crazy. And like you say, the money that they're spending on it would be better spent putting into homeless services and, you know,
100%, yeah,
fixing the housing crisis. But that's really refreshing to hear that fifth and sixth year students have those views that, you know, it is marginalising, it is separating, you know, us and them. And it's definitely not, hopefully not going to be the way that we're going to continue. Because I definitely, from being in other cities, you know, it's not as bad in Dublin as, let's say, London, for example.
Yeah.
London is really taking it to the extreme.
Yeah, and that's kind of what we brought up. A lot of the photos we brought up were from London and other cities like London and New York. And I know for myself, I have a lot of friends over who live in London, and from visiting there, it's gotten worse. And every year I go over, it gets worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. And I just kind of think that it's pointless. It's really highlighting a problem that really should be fixed at the root, and not, it feels like it's just, it's trying to fix a problem, trying to fix it instantaneously instead of spending the money and the time to fix the problem at the root.
Yep, 100%. I totally agree with you, Lou. You've made some really good points. Stay with me there. I'm going to get John involved. Hi, John. How are you?
Good evening. How are you?
I can hear myself back. John, we're going to try and get a better line for you there. We'll call you back in just a second. Let me go to Peter, who's on the line there. Hi, Peter. How are you?
Hi, AJ.
So you're from the renters union. What do you think about hostile architecture?
We've always opposed it. I think it's first of all, it's exclusionary, and there's people who are very vulnerable in society, as we know already, with homelessness. You know, the dramatic increase in homelessness, in particular over the last few years. And at the same time, we've seen, like last year in Dublin, there was over 40 people known to homeless services died in the streets. And yet the plan is, even with Dublin City Council as well, is to really prohibit spaces from people actually occupying spaces in Dublin, and in particular the people who are most vulnerable and marginalised, such as the homeless community. So that's the whole push towards this is really a drive towards pushing out of sight, out of mind, and they want to get people off main streets, off the shopping streets, off like areas like the GPO. They tried to work to ban super runs recently, with Dublin City Council as well. To force them onto sort of side streets and stuff as well. This stuff doesn't work. Like, you have to deal, as Louis just said previously, just heard him, 100%, you have to deal with the root cause of these issues, like, and societal issues. Because really, apart from the anti-homeless side of things as well, a lot of people, like, you know, people skateboard, people use public spaces are so important to use for everybody. It shouldn't be just for people who are of a certain social class versus others. It's generally the ones who aren't without the resources or out the access to the facilities are the ones that suffer and lose out because of this. Like, so fundamentally, it really is an attack on ordinary working class people. And that's really what this is all about. Like, you know, fundamentally, and then that filters down at the sharpest end to people who are homeless, who are looking for somewhere to sleep. Like a number of years ago, the Disney store on Grafton Street put up gates outside their premises to prevent anybody from sleeping there. This is, like, you know, you don't push the issue away. You address the issue and you confront it and you actually deal with it. And you deal with it from a human standpoint, where people actually, their needs are addressed, rather than this nonsense of pushing it onto side streets and, you know, out of sight, out of mind, as I said, which is going to create, you know, people who are in vulnerable positions into more vulnerable positions. Because people, fundamentally, I know so many that have been forced out of the city because it's because of various safety issues, but also because they feel safer sleeping further and further away. Like about 6 or 7 years ago, we knew a man who passed away in Ranelagh, just not far yards away from a private school, because he didn't feel safe sleeping in around the city. And he spoke to me as well previously about the issues with the anti sort of homeless rhetoric that was going up, even with the issues around the planning system as well, in terms of pushing this hostile architecture in as well. So these issues are making people who are in very vulnerable positions even more isolated and marginalised in society. And really, fundamentally, unless we address those issues at the core, we're really just going to push these problems somewhere else, and it's just going to create a city, which, like, Dublin is fundamentally, and as I'm sure it's a lot of other cities around the country, that are being destroyed with all these issues as well, with the extra crime and all the other issues. But fundamentally, I think there's other issues there. Like the real crimes for me in Dublin City are people being made homeless in the first place, but also the amount of vacancy and dereliction all around Dublin City. Like, look at O'Connell Street, for instance, places like Moore Street, like iconic in Irish history, and they're being destroyed all in the name of profit, leaving places empty for years and years, and really undermining the whole social fabric of our society.
And I just want to go back there to what you said about, kids maybe using skateboards or teenagers using skateboards and stuff like that. Because I think a lot of people would say, oh, well, they shouldn't be using them in public spaces like that. But that's surely the makeup of a city. You know, you've got groups of kids who are skateboarding and they're using buildings, you know, like sort of in Temple Bar or at steps on the front of buildings and stuff like that. And it's something that is part of the rich tapestry of a city.
Absolutely, and that's what brings cities to life. Like, if you have people of all, everybody mixing together, where people can socialise, like, and mix, and you're not based on whatever your class is. Essentially, people should go and have spaces where they feel safe and comfortable. And, like, you know, God forbid people meet, talk and discuss issues that are important to them. And maybe they might say, well, you know, I think we need a community centre in the area. Maybe we need better services. That sort of goes against the bigger agenda in society, really, you know, because people, they don't want, fundamentally, I think, people meeting in areas. And they've had a drastic attack on the public spaces around Dublin City. Like, they walk around Dublin 8 days a week, or I'm sure it's probably the same in a lot of cities around Ireland as well. And places are essentially being dismantled. Some areas are becoming so-called no-go zones. They've been ran down so much because of systemic failure of government policy to invest in communities such as, like, inner city Dublin, for instance, and areas that are just totally left behind. And essentially, like, you should be bringing those places to life. Historically, we have a fantastic country and a fantastic city. And where's the vision to create a city that's inclusive for everybody and people don't feel isolated or left behind or marginalised? And that creates other issues in society, AJ, like, such as more issues around mental health, crises we have at the moment as well. And, like, you know, bring people together, get people meeting, get people mixing, but get people involved in the decision-making process. That's what really should fundamentally change. Instead of top-down decisions where people feel like they're powerless. Like, a number of years ago, in Portobello in Rathmines, there's a beautiful public space there, and a hotel came in and decided we were going to fence off the whole area, which was a public space, and it closed there for nearly 2 or 3 years. And there's a lot of people live in bedsits and flats and around that area as well. A lot of younger teenagers used it for skateboarding, and they all mixed freely. People played music on a Saturday afternoon. It was a brilliant, vibrant place to go where people could mix. There's no investment in public spaces. You need investment in, you know, toilet facilities for people, basic facilities that people can actually feel, I can go out and I don't feel like I have to go in and buy a cup of coffee for 10 euro because I don't have the money, and people can mix. Like, and that's what fundamentally, that's how you build it. You know, a good fabric of a decent society, I'd always argue for, like, because otherwise we're just down the road of marginalising people, fencing off places and running down people. And then what happens over time is the whole fabric of those areas and communities change, and that leads to gentrification, which essentially is a lot of social cleansing and forces people from their communities and makes people more isolated.
Yeah.
And that creates other issues as well.
And then what you were saying as well about out of sight, out of mind, and then, you know, homeless people being pushed out of the cities and they're sort of down back streets now and stuff like that. Are they losing then their, you know, their protection of having others around them by being forced out into those areas, and they're at more of a risk then?
Well, absolutely. Because, like, you know, a lot of people would meet at or sleep in areas that are bright or well lit and where people are around. And that is a big issue, because people, in terms of being on the streets, it's absolutely just shocking for everybody who's on the street. Like, last rough sleeper count, the so-called official rough sleeper count in Dublin, I said it was up to 120 people who sleep on the streets. Like, they feel, for various variety of reasons, such as they don't feel safe in homeless accommodation. A lot of people feel safe in a bright, well-lit public space, so they know there's less chance of anything happening to them. So, but, you know, this is a big issue. We should be confronting this issue and addressing it. If we're a proper, mature society, we'd have those frank discussions and say, well, how can we actually resolve this without actually going down the road of putting spikes on outside shop fronts or putting barriers along the Grand Canal in terms of the immigration stuff that went on as well last year. Like that even the fences along the Grand Canal were absolutely appalling. And they had a big... That's like the Grand Canal is a hugely significant part of it. Of our history in Dublin, back to the 1700s, and in particular, like that, a lot of people use that just to actually access and go for a walk on a Saturday afternoon, and that became all like this no-go barricade city, no-go zone, and that would have huge health and safety issues as well. Rather than addressing the issues of immigration at the core and say what is the issue here, we've obviously the sheer volume coming in, we can't capacitate it. We need to address it properly, rather than just put barriers, force people somewhere else, and then somebody roars louder than somebody else, or somebody, for instance, in a better off area might say, well, I have an access to a solicitor, I have access to more resources, I can take a legal challenge against these people for whatever are people that they don't like. And that's essentially how Ireland and Dublin really works. Like it really demonstrates the fundamental classism in Ireland, but also the system in terms of the planning system, I think, in particular. A lot of planners push this forward because they benefit from the so-called regeneration of cities and revitalization, which is essentially class cleansing. It's which they call gentrification. It forces people from inner city working class communities, in particular around Dublin, out of their areas, out from their families, from their networks. Like, you know, you go around Dublin City now and like you look at all the flat complexes are completely being just ran down into the ground, like places like Pierce House, built by Herbert Sims, an iconic in terms of our Dublin architecture and what Dublin City Council could do, what Dublin Corporation could do in terms of building homes for people. It's actually falling down around people's ears at the moment. And like at the same time, you have multi-million euro apartment blocks going up beside it, and you have people, you know, for instance, high-paid workers moving in next door, which changes the whole dynamic of the area.
And then just to mention as well, because we're coming up to St. Patrick's Day, and I know in a lot of cities when it's coming up to, you know, a big event, they try to clear out the streets of anybody so that it's not seen by tourists. Yeah. So, like I say, for St. Patrick's Day, there's going to be a massive clear out of anybody who's on the streets. And it's happened. That happens in cities all over the world. So that it's not on view for tourists.
Yeah, absolutely. Like a lot of recently, the Super Bowl, I think, in New Orleans did the same thing. They cleared out close enough to the stadium. They cleared out a homeless encampment. People that had actually lived in security, essentially there for a number of years, and moved it out just in advance of the Super Bowl. So the world's eye wouldn't be on it to force them away. And they're doing the same in Dublin in terms of the GPO. The amount of superons that actually set up and decent people that get out and care for their people. And they're really the leaders. They should be the leaders in society. People get out and stand up and support people who are the most vulnerable and give their time and energy and effort to support people. They've been trying to be shunted off into street corners or inside alleys and all this sort of stuff. Like, and you know, like if you put anything, you know, Ireland, I think fundamentally, Ireland for years and years, everything has been brushed under the carpet for years and years and years. We've seen that through loads of cases. You can go back to the 70s in Ireland and beyond, you know, with all the stuff going on, Magdalen laundries and all this sort of stuff, and people years later, why didn't they do something about it? But we have our own full-blown humanitarian disaster in terms of the homeless disaster. Come out and confront it and address the underlying issues around it, such as people being evicted from the private rental sector, not building enough public housing, the issues around, for instance, the support services for people who are in a homeless accommodation. In terms of, it's not necessarily just giving somebody a home, but it's giving them the necessary services to support them in their lives. Like, and people need those proper services rather than just lip service. And this, you know, always, 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 it's like, when will we change? I think hopefully we will change in Ireland, but I think more people need to really, really, really look at really what's going on and target the people essentially who are the guys calling the shots in Irish society, the politicians and so forth as well, who talk really
Peter,
empty.
Peter, stay with me there. I'm going to have to go to the ads, but do stay with me. I'll be going to John after the break as well. If you want to get in touch, we're talking about hostile architecture in cities across Ireland. If you want to get in touch on WhatsApp, 087-188-0008. We'll be back after this. Nighttime Talk with myself, AJ Walsh, sitting in for Niall Boylan. We're asking if hostile architecture is a necessary tool to maintain order and safety, or does it represent a cruel tactic that marginalises those already in distress? Now, I'm going to go to John. John, you had a bad line before. How are you doing now?
I'm good. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. I can hear you perfectly now. So what do you think about this?
Well, I would be in favour of it if it meant driving out the organised begging gangs.
Okay. Go ahead, yeah.
Because I'm from Cork, right? And I'd been told every evening, right? And most of the people that beg outside the shopping centres are organised crime gangs. And I can tell you, they're being dropped off into town, right? But in four people carriers, right? The North Main Street, the North Mall, the South Mall, and Patrick Street. Now, I know people are going to think it's inhumane, like, but the reality is, like, there's something has to be done because, you know, the local economy down here is not in the best of shape, you know? So I would be in favour of it if it was done for the purpose of driving these people out. But I can see.
But the thing is, would it really make a difference to those people, the people who are, you know, they're organised begging gangs? Would it really make a difference to them?
Well, it would, because it would send a message to them. You know.
And do you think that this is one of the main problems where you are then?
Well, it is one of the main problems for me. I see it nearly every day when I'm inside in town. You know. As I said, they've been dropped off every evening at 5:30 down around the corner from Tenney's in people carriers. But look, I understand why people might have a moral issue with it, but I do think something has to be done, you know, because it's driving people out of the city.
Yeah, I do hear what you're saying, but do you not think that there's a better way of dealing with that sort of thing, like with the guards getting involved and, you know, actually cracking down on gangs rather than putting money into hostile architecture that's probably not going to deter them anyway?
Well, put it this way, right? I can understand why people are saying that when the guards might come along, but this is from my own experience, right? That when I'm going into the likes of Pennies, right? And I'm coming out right before it closes, right? It's mostly not Irish people that I see begging now. That's a fact, right? It's mostly the foreign organised begging gangs. You know?
Yeah,
I can't speak for the rest of the country because I'm not. I don't be outside of Cork much, you know? I can only just speak for down here, so. If it meant, as I said, if it meant driving these gangs out, then yes, I'd be in favour of it.
Okay.
You know?
Stay with me there, John. I'm going to go to Dave as well. Hi, Dave. How are you?
Hi, how are you doing?
So do you think that, you know, there's a place for hostile architecture, or do you think that we need to get to the root cause of homelessness and the housing crisis that we have?
Well, initially, I would think that certain businesses, if they want to do it, I don't actually begrudge them doing it because they're waiting on the government to sort this out for how long? And, like, if there's people sleeping rough in front of their business and they're losing business, I can understand why a business might say, OK, we need to put something up here because we looked at the books from last month and last year. We're definitely down on footfall because they're being driven away. I know it's not their fault they're homeless or whatever, but at the same time, you don't really want to be going in buying stuff and kind of looking at homeless people. Like, it's hard enough getting money for yourself and then you feel guilty walking past a load of homeless people because the government won't fix the problem.
But if they do this, it's just going to move people to somewhere else. It's not fixing the problem. So you're still going to have the issue, but it will just be on a different street.
Yeah, I can see where that comes from. But I was speaking purely on a business basis. No, not if the government is bringing in stuff, fencing down the canal and that kind of stuff. I can understand that kind of stuff, but like, they shouldn't be doing that. The government should be solving the problem. I was only speaking purely from the business side of it. And as I said in my message when I sent it in there, it is very hard in a country where the majority of our TDs are landlords. It doesn't really seem that they have an incentive to solve the housing problem, because as long as there's homeless people, there's a high demand for houses. And if there's a high demand for houses, then they can keep the rent high. There's no real incentive for them to solve the problem, because then they might lose money.
Peter, do you see where Dave's coming from, talking about, you know, if a private business wants to deter people from being out the front of their shop because that might, you know, deter customers from coming in? Do you think that that's okay then?
Well, no. Well, I don't think it's okay. But I understand. I fully understand what Dave is saying. He's quite right. Like, because, like, you know, people want to go in to a city and, you know, whatever they are, town or village, whatever, spend time and actually people are struggling already. Small businesses, more small businesses are closing down than ever. But that's not necessarily down to because people are outside a store. That's down to because the government and the politicians really haven't supported them. And they haven't supported them, you know, through a myriad of issues. So, it's like using a sledgehammer to crack a nut. That's what essentially is being done. Like, you know, what happens is a problem or the issue goes somewhere else, and that creates other issues. Like, you know, it goes down dark alleyways or laneways. Like, rather than confronting the issues and saying it to your politicians and demanding off the politicians as well, that this we don't want this to happen in our town. We want to support our businesses. But you know yourself, the bottom line is that you're right. What you said, Dave. The vast majority of I think 42 is the current Dáil, are landlords.
Yeah, that's the new Dáil, but the last Dáil is way higher.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, that's the ones who were only listed. But the thing is, you won't get turkeys voting for Christmas. And unfortunately, what they are. They're not going to vote for anything that goes against their interests.
Yeah. And the problem is, like, you've your man, Donal Kerry, I think he's over 20 houses alone.
Well, Healy Ray.
He's over 22 houses, I think.
Yeah, but this is the nonsense in Ireland. Like, this is what goes on in Ireland. And it goes on in Dublin as well as Kerry and everywhere. They play this game, the man of the people, and they're ripping them off behind their back.
Oh, like, yeah.
Michael Healy Ray has been the biggest. He's actually one of the guys who has a lot of distressed mortgages that he's bought on his books. And he's profiting off renting them out now. They're renting out properties on, a lot of these landlords in the Dáil are renting out properties on the housing assistance payment scheme. They're renting out property, getting a lot of public money for that. Robert Roy is a massive number of properties. But like, that's the issue in Ireland. We need to dramatically shift the Dáil. And
the problem is, though, Peter, like, we had an election. They're there for the next 5 years, and they know they're safe. They're not going to do anything now.
Well, you know what? If you think elections are going to change, Anton, I think
I don't. Not in Ireland, anyway.
John, are you trying to come in there? Is that yourself, John?
Feet on the street is what changes things.
Just let John speak there, guys.
Yeah, but you see, you just mentioned about the guards, right? There are so few guards in the streets. Like, that's part of the problem as well. I mean, if you had more
community
police, you'd have the problem. Well, exactly. Take a walk on Patrick Street. There's about, on average, 2-3 guards walking on Patrick Street. That ain't going to solve the problem. But
One lad robs from a shop, and then three of them are occupied for 2 hours.
Yeah, but if you had more guards,
so then it's free rein for anyone else there.
Yeah, well, if more guards on the street, you wouldn't have half the problems.
Well, it's community. You're right. Community policing. Community policing.
I remember when I was young. I was from a rougher area, and we knew the guard. He used to walk around. He'd chat to us all. He knew everyone.
Yeah.
And he'd know you, and you'd see him coming, and you'd say, oh, there's Jerry coming, no. And we'd all know him. But because he dealt with us better.
Well, we were the same growing up in Dublin as well. Everybody knew the local community guard. And he'd know you.
Yeah,
he'd actually know everybody's name. And you'd be like, The thing is, like, you need police and by consent, more police on the street. Like, what John just said about the organised begging gangs, like, undoubtedly it goes on. But that should be cut off at source in terms of that's a lot of human trafficking going on in Ireland as well. That's not being talked about.
Yeah.
A lot of this sort of stuff. So there's like exploitation all up the chains through these criminal gangs as well. They should be challenged. Like, they shouldn't be just let. And like, if you have a visible presence of police in the street, that's important. But what's important as well is that I know a shop owner in Limerick that was telling me a few weeks ago that he apprehended like a shoplifter in the store. Like, this is somebody who was going in all the time in shoplifting, and he was 4 hours waiting for a car to come. It's difficult enough.
And he probably got arrested then for holding someone against their will.
Well,
but that's the kind of country we live in, like, the foster prison and then the shop owner.
Well, you need proper, like, if you have proper community policing, and policing by consent, you don't want people going in with, a public order unit coming in, something down the road. You want a guard to be properly engaged in the community. And most people in the community, and those the shop owners, they get to know people's names, not just coming in with a public order unit when there's an issue arises, or we need to crack down on this. Like, everything in Ireland seems to be cracking down, rather than dealing with the issue at source, like, and actually confronting the issue and then trying to get a solution for it. Get solutions for it. Don't, like, what are we? We're not living in a dictatorship, but even though it's the government sometimes thinks they want us to live in a dictatorship.
Yeah, kind of are, though, I would say, in my opinion.
Sorry, can I come back in?
Yeah, but it's people on the street. That's how change comes. Change always comes from below, and people need to get back to the whole sense of community, wherever we live, Dublin, in rural areas, villages, or whatever. Bring that back, because it has to be taken back. We have to take the power back to communities, because the politicians are completely out of touch with the lived experience of the most people who are suffering every day of the week with loads of crises, trying to keep their head above water, cost of living crisis, that homeless disaster, people on sleeping out outside Marlborough Street the other day looking for a meeting with Helen McEntee because they couldn't get school places, and then on top of it we have the immigration chaos as well. So, like, you know, people will have to stand up at some point and say, listen, we've taken enough of this. And tipping point will come at some point where people will say, listen, what Ireland do we want? Do we want to go down the same road, or do you want to put an Ireland for the people where people, their needs are met, and they can actually have a say in what goes on in their lives, because people feel powerless. Like, but we have to take the power back. That's what
John, did you want to say something there?
Yeah, I just want to come back into to comment on the other chap who mentioned about TDs. I mean, look, it's a business to them, look. It's not in their interest to solve the problem, because they're making money from it. You know?
Yeah. That's what I was saying, yeah.
So,
if you have 20 houses and you're getting 1,500 for each one, like, that's a lot of money every month, like.
Well, yeah, totally agree. So,
let me just go to Micheál. I've got Micheál waiting on the line. I'm just going to go to Micheál. Just stay with me there, guys. Hi, Micheál. How are you?
Good evening to you. You've touched a very broad subject, some of it that I'm very familiar with. One day we had a gentleman referring to the Healy Rails, not the property they own. We are crying out every day for the private investor to invest money into the property for the purpose of reletting it. We're begging for the private investor. Now, Healy Rails are absolutely gentlemen. I knew their dad well. I've met them. But apart from all that, I wouldn't know them in business. I see what they do. And I also know that one of them, referred to Jackie Healy, sent in coaches to the north with a whole lot of people on, a cost to himself, getting eye surgery done, cataracts removed, because they can't get it done down here. There's nobody in this country, I don't think we've any better politicians than those Healy Rays. We take a look at the opposition at the present minute. We've no opposition to this, like the situation of homelessness. It is a disaster. You know, the reason is 15,000 people homeless, 4,000 to 5,000 of those are kids. We've got 500,000 children from 2 years of age drastically needing surgery of different types of bumps. We've no money to do it because we're giving the confounded thing away. And you've made it for 3 years, both of them are married. He's done nothing about it. He has no policy on it. We're bringing in shiploads of people from the third world. And Farron's, to me, is a direct one. 140 million. I put up about 120 of them. And they're treated like royalty. You've professional staff in there, some of whom I know. They're securing jobs from these people in different stores and whatnot. Now, sure enough, a lot of the jobs that they are securing, some of our own people said, oh, no, I won't do that. They get as much in the door. But the problem is, we're bringing in these people, the money that we've been sending. Imagine that 140 million for that salary. Imagine the amount of people in the greater area of Naas, Kildare, Tala, that had 140 million. That would have started out a massive amount of homeless. And that's mainly one spot. There's hundreds and hundreds of millions being spent. Now, I've no objection to the war torn countries. And I've no objection to anybody, irrespective of his colour. I couldn't care less what colour they are. What I have an objection to is the state wasting your money and my money and everybody else's tax money, bringing in people. If we have money left over, well and good, give it away. But while we don't have it left over, we don't have properties left over. How dare the government, how dare they, and the opposition, the Ian's mayor, there's not a word out of her. There's not a word out of her regarding this. And everybody seems to be spellbound. When you come to refer to these, and if you refer to them as the country they represent, you're put off. Nobody's entitled to say it. I had a couple of friends there last November, dragged out of their trucks in Cali to get on the thing. They were dragged out of their lorries, doors broken, they were dragged out and stabbed beyond recognition. They wanted to take their lorries to bring a lorry load of people from their country into Ireland. From once they got the lorry, they were gone. They didn't get anywhere. They probably, I hope, they got to jail. But they stabbed. I have photographs of it. Some of them are my friends. They were Irish truck drivers. They get horrendous abuse. And we are bringing these people in. That, as Ryanair said, half the time their pilots are full and blocked with torn up passports and torn up ID papers. If somebody here that doesn't have a proper idea, I don't care what part of the world it comes from, he stays exactly where he's standing until the next flight out is available. And I'd handcuff him and chain his feet as well. Next flight out. And all the rest of you, don't you dare come back. They're hiding their paperwork. They're hiding their true identity. We don't have one earthly clue who they are, what they represented, or what they've been getting up for. And it's true. You go up to Mount Joy and see the colour scheme in Mount Joy or any of these places.
Well, Micheál, we're not going to focus in on just a specific thing like that. We're talking about hostile architecture and homelessness in our cities, basically.
We're not talking about the homeless. I'm referring to the homeless. The homeless that we have is because we're bringing in shiploads of people to take up our accommodation. We're buying in the amount of hotels we're taking up.
But we definitely need to look at the immigration issue. You can come in there. Yeah.
Thanks, AJ. Just to say something, right? The immigration chaos, no doubt, it's put pressure on the services that are there, and it's absolutely exacerbated. And it benefits the big employers because it is a race to the bottom in terms of cheap labour and employment, and absolutely it does benefit them. But the government, this is deliberate manufactured housing disaster. This isn't something that just came out of thin air. This is deliberately manufactured. So to say it's because, you know, X, Y, and Z, it's not. It's because they've manufactured a scarcity, manufactured a pressure on the services, and they're benefiting and profiting from it. All their private interests are benefiting from it. And what you said already about Michael Healy-Ray, I'll be honest with you, Michael Healy-Ray is in government, along with Michael Lowry and many of the others, are in government with him now, doing the bidding of Brussels, rather than doing the bidding of ordinary people here in Ireland. So on one hand, you're saying, well, he paid for it out of his own hand. Last month, €567,000 was paid in expenses to the TDs. €567,000. Yesterday, the cabinet signed off and given €100 million to Ukraine. They've given €100 million again to Ukraine again, right, to try and support their borders, but they can't even control their own borders. So, like, Michael Healy-Ray and Lowry and all the lads with Harris and Martin are all there in a cabal together, working together, along with a lot of the opposition. I don't have time for a lot of the opposition either. So we're all working together, and they don't really give a damn about the people who are here or suffering. You know, they're miles away.
The Michael Lowry's and all these people, yes, they're exceptionally sharp businessmen. Like, you take the problem that Lowry went through. The trouble he went through with Lowry. He's a massive... He invests in the country. So do the Healy Reyes. We're talking
Hang on a second there, Micheál. Michael Lowry was found by the Moriarty Tribunal to be... his corruption was contemptible. So, like, this is the Moriarty Tribunal. So that was found and supported by Micheál Martin when he actually... He supported a motion for him to resign his seat in Dáil Éireann, and now he's doing a deal with him. So what does that tell you about Ireland? The nod and the wink attitude.
Sorry, I'm going to have to stop you there, guys, because I am going to have to go to the ads. I would just like to just say there that it's, you know, we're not saying that the issue is caused by immigration. There's obviously, we do have an issue at the moment with housing, and it is a case where we do need to look at our immigration policies, but it's not an issue that is caused by immigration, and that's not what we're saying at all. If you do want to get involved in the conversation, 087 188 0008 is the number for WhatsApp. We'll be back after this. to Nighttime Talk on Ireland's Classic Hits Radio. We're talking about hostile architecture ruining our towns and cities. Well, we're asking you, do you think they're ruining our towns and cities? We've got a message here from a listener saying that hostile architecture is just one more symptom of ineffective government policies. It's turning our cities into ugly, non-inviting areas. Not only is it ugly, it's ineffective because the unfortunate homeless individuals will just move on to other spots. What we need is government and councils to treat the problems at source. And I think that that's very true. And from talking to Peter just there before the break, he was saying that homeless people are then being pushed into more isolated areas, and it's isolating them then even more and putting them into more danger. So I'm just going to go to Mike now. I've got Mike waiting on the line. Hi, Mike. How are you doing?
Hi, AJ. How are you, dear? How are things?
Yeah, not too bad.
Good. So just wanted there, the couple of there, they were criticising there about the, you know, the politicians there, and they're becoming owners of lots of property and things like that. So when they had a big issue there some time ago, at the moment, people getting out of having properties for letting and that, like. But like, to deal with the source, like, as some guy said there earlier on about these gangs coming into the city centres and the town centres in people carriers and going out begging. Like, there's still enough police about to deal with them issues. And with them issues to be dealt with is, and what we're going to have to start doing is, people like that, and that are doing it illegally, to the airport and ship them back to their own countries. You have to be cruel to be kind. We have to be cruel to the likes of them people that are manipulating the situation and destroying.
Well, I don't think, like we've said before, that's not what's causing the issue, and it's not a case where you can just go and do that. We definitely need to look at the immigration issue. We need to tackle the immigration issue. We need to tackle the homeless issue, the housing crisis that we're in, which, you know, Peter, you refer to it as a humanitarian disaster here at the moment, the housing issue, which it actually is, and it's causing a lot of issues. And then on top of that now, we've got hostile architecture, which is designed to keep people out of our towns and cities, which honestly is not the solution.
Oh, no, absolutely. As I said, AJ, like, it's just that. But as I said, like, this is all part of a lot of architects and planners work around this process as well, to work towards gentrifying areas and forcing people from communities on the wider level. Like, if you walk through Dublin now, it's nearly unrecognisable in compared to what it was maybe 10 or 15 years ago, because, like, you've seen dramatic shifts in Dublin. You see a glut of vacant properties around Dublin City, dereliction. You go down all the streets in Dublin City, you go down through Anger Street, you see dereliction everywhere. Like, you know, and it's like, and over shops and stuff, places that could be used for vibrant communities where you have.
Yeah, no, that's a really good point. And dereliction is an issue in any town that I've been to in Ireland, any city that I've been to in Ireland since I've been back. I've been back for 3 years now. The dereliction is a major issue. So, Mike, I want to say that to you. What about, you know, if we tackle things like dereliction, there will be enough. Hopefully then there'd be enough space for people to live if we tackle things like that, rather than going about, you know, putting money into hostile architecture to deter people from being in our towns and cities.
Yeah, but this hostile architecture that you're on about, like, that's going on in every town in Ireland. And this EEC money that's coming in that the councils are spending for supposed to be improving town centres and all that, and what they're doing, they're only taking up care spaces. They're not solving any problem. They're only creating more problems.
Yeah.
I was talking to a friend of mine there. I know he's in business there in a town there in Cork, and they're doing all that. And there's 30 less care spaces in the town centre now because of this architecture, which is a waste of money, like a waste of public money that could be a lot better spent in more pressing issues, like, you know.
And Mike, another issue that came up with this is it's deterring, you know, teenagers from having spaces that they can hang out in our towns and cities, which is part of what a city and a town should be. There should be people around. There should be places to meet up. There should be places where kids can go on their skateboards and stuff. And if there's concentrated areas where there's loads of kids wanting to go skateboarding, well, then it can be a talking point for then, do we need to create a skate park? And, you know, that's how towns and cities grow and should grow, instead of trying to push everybody out of them.
100%, yes. And, like, that's what I've been saying there to my friends there lately, like, that back in the 50s and 60s, like, there was a boxing club in every town, every village in the country. They're not there no more, like, and okay, like, skateboarding would be a great thing for teenagers rather than these computers and whatever that crack, all them games that they're on in computers. Yeah, skateboarding or boxing clubs, things like, that kids and teenagers would be able to burn up their energy and their mind would be active. They'd be learning something rather than stuck in computers and all that all the time. I would be an advocate of that, like, but, you know, the skateboarding isn't for everybody, like, but...
But that's just one example. You, like, know what I mean? Just, yeah.
You're 100% right, AJ. You're 100% right. And the other thing is that the electric bikes and all that, which are creating antisocial behaviour, they should be banned straight out. No ifs or buts or ends or nothing. Banned.
I don't disagree with you there. Yeah, I mean, they're so dangerous. They really so make me anxious. Yeah. Very
it's
anxious.
Frightening, like. It's frightening, AJ, like. It's so frightening, like. But and that's the way. Look, you have to be cool to be kind, and that's the way to do it. And you know, okay, there might be a small percentage where people, they're beneficial for people for going to work and things like that. Get the push bike. Go back to the push bike.
Bring back the push bike, says Mike. That's your new campaign. I agree with you, Mike. I agree with you. Bring back the push bike.
Yeah.
100%. I'm going to have to go to the news in a second. Peter, any last words before I go? Before we go?
Yeah, no, just thanks, AJ. But even what Micah said, 100%, like, unless we start investing in young people, but ask the young people what they want. Don't be like putting them, you know, say tennis courts where nobody plays tennis, like, or something. Ask them what they want. Do you want a skate park? Do you want a boxing club? What do you want investment in? Where you can actually mix and socialise and flourish. Like, that's what, you know, people need. But you want to know to mix together. Like, you know, it shouldn't be just like segregation where this is for young people, this is for old. Bring people together in a proper society. And it isn't utopian. It's just basic building a proper society where people are respected and people that saves an absolute, even money-wise, from the economic point of view, it makes everything better rather than spending money on all these draconian, hostile acts that they try and push problems somewhere else. You know, come out and, you know, put a city. It's a living, breathing place, that's so always changing. But, like, use the vacancy and dereliction and tackle that and bring the place to life. These are living, breathing cities, like, and we're lucky to be part of them currently. You don't want to leave them in a worse place than when we got them. I think that's what really should be looked at, like, in terms of society and the way we're going.
Lovely. Thank you so much, Peter. Thanks, John. Thanks, Mike. And thanks to everybody who got involved. When we come back after the news, we're going to be talking about children in pubs. Should they be banned in Ireland? The pub is more than just a place to drink. It's a social space and a community hub. But is it really the right environment for under 18s? Should we be rethinking our approach, or is it just another example of unnecessary regulation? If you want to get involved in that one, you can WhatsApp 087-188-0008, and we will be back.
Now. Real people, real opinions. Nighttime Talk with Niall Boylan.
Ireland's classic hits radio.